Federal Drive is presented by GEHA, Government Employees Health Association, proudly providing health and dental benefits to federal employees and their families. Visit GEHA.com.
It's a classic story. New technology becomes widely available to consumers. The government falls behind from lagging policy and plain old inertia. Well, now the National Institute of Standards and Technology is trying to buck that trend with the latest update to its digital identity guidelines. The new guidance could help agencies adopt stronger forms of multi-factor authentication. Federal News Network's Justin Doubleday joins me with the latest. And what is in this new digital identity guidance from NIST, Justin?
Yeah, this supplement, as NIST is calling it, to the digital identity guidance offers some guidelines for incorporating syncable authenticators. Now, these are more commonly known as passkeys. They can sync across multiple different devices. A good example is Apple's Face ID. The FIDO Alliance, which is an industry group that sets open standards for passkeys, says these are a major way to get away from relying on passwords, which, of course, are difficult to remember and increasingly easy to hack. So the NIST update is actually the first supplement it's issued for these guidelines. Typically, the agency takes years to issue a wholesale revision to these publications rather than issuing these small updates. But Ryan Galuso, the digital identity program lead at NIST, says the supplement comes after a lot of people submitted comments about the lack of support for these synced passkeys.
So agencies are expected to offer phishing-resistant authentication to individuals coming to use their services online. Now, there's not a ton of ways to do that without things like hardware security keys and being able to kind of distribute those. We've realized we can come up with a set of requirements that can allow agencies to make use of this technology right now in a way that will help particularly the public in being able to improve the way they authenticate to online services.
Yeah, it almost reminds me of the early days of the web when federal agencies weren't allowed to keep cookies about people, you know, and so forth, and that limited their utility. So why were the use of synced passkeys, we should say it's S-Y-N-C, not sync, like sinking a ship, why were these off limits to begin with under the NIST guidance?
Yeah, so the synced passkeys are relatively new. These are things that sync across multiple devices. They started becoming widely available just a couple of years ago, around 2022. And the last version of NIST digital identity guidelines came out in 2017. And a strict reading of those guidelines would prevent agencies from using synced passkeys because it bars them from using cryptographic device authenticators that can be exported to multiple devices. That's the way these synced passkeys work. If you look at the NIST guidance, agencies are required to follow it and see that line in there, then you're going to think, well, we can't really use or offer the public the ability to use these different passkeys to authenticate into our services. So the idea here with the supplement is that agencies can now read this if they were thinking about it, but saying, hey, the NIST guidance doesn't allow us to use it. Now it does.
And when agencies get this guidance, what do they have to do to utilize it?
Well, they're not required necessarily to do anything. NIST's guidance isn't directive, but it is the standard that agencies follow. But there's two main use cases that agencies are thinking about here. There's the public-facing use cases that Ryan Galuso from NIST referenced, and then there's the enterprise use cases. So the federal zero trust strategy directs agencies to offer phishing-resistant multi-factor authentication for public-facing services. And so that's where these synced passkeys could be used potentially almost immediately by agencies. As for the enterprise side, how agencies, you know, authenticate their actual employees and contractors to access their internal networks, there are probably a few extra steps that agencies have to go through to make sure that they can use these passkeys securely. Galuso says NIST is actually working with the FIDO Alliance on some of those to help answer some of those big questions.
How do you make sure you've got the policy enforcement capability on devices to prevent things like sharing from one device that is enterprise managed to a device that isn't enterprise managed? All right, so making sure that we've got a standard set of requirements and expectations and ideally implementation paths that agencies can understand, all right, if I'm going to use these, what do I need to put in place? What do I need to potentially procure? What kind of features do I need to have with like my mobile device management? They're almost there. I think we need to kind of address some of those gaps, but I think they're pretty close on the enterprise side.
Almost there, pretty close. When do they actually expect to come out with this revision for the digital identities?
Yeah, the broader revision to the guidelines, Galuso told me he hopes to have that update out by the end of the year. These comments come from actually Okta's conference that happened in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday. So that's why there's so much conversation about digital identity, naturally. This NIST update will include the supplement on passkeys. It will also address a lot of other questions around identity, the use of things like biometrics and facial recognition, as well as AI, and how perhaps organizations can address things like deepfakes that are becoming a bigger and bigger issue.
And meanwhile, while we're on the topic of identities, NIST is also doing some work on mobile driver's licenses, which seems a decade overdue. What's the latest there, Justin?
Yeah, more states are rolling out these mobile driver's licenses, MDLs. They can be stored in a smartphone wallet. TSA has been at the forefront of actually adopting these and allowing for their use at some limited amount of airports around the country. Now, NIST's digital identity team is working internally with the agency's National Cybersecurity Center of Excellence on how people can use mobile driver's licenses online to authenticate and verify their identity for different use cases. Glusso says NIST is working with the international standards community to better define the actual technical standards around the mobile driver's license itself. And then importantly, NIST is working with technology groups to understand how standard APIs could allow for the use of these MDLs across different applications, whether that's a federal agency online service or otherwise. So Glusso says NIST is really working through all of those issues right now on the technical and design side of MDLs.
Is it ready for prime time? Probably not quite, but it is getting there. And, you know, one of our goals is to be able to, within our digital identity guidelines, make sure it's prepared for that future. So we are allowing for the acceptance of mobile driver's license and then simultaneously working on the application side to make sure that we bring the actual ability to use them online.
Well, anything that makes a thinner wallet is welcome in my view. I don't like fat wallets, so let's hope they get that one out pretty soon.
Yeah, I think it. Everyone's putting their cards in the back of their phones now, so why not just put the actual digital card within your phone, right?
Fair enough. Federal News Network's Justin Doubleday, thanks so much.
All right, thanks, Tom.
And be sure to check out his story at federalnewsnetwork.com.
Leadership today, especially within the federal workforce, is being tested more than ever before. As the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency's Chief People Officer, Elizabeth Comstetter sees a focus on people as absolutely crucial to her leadership style. Comstetter joined Shane Canfield, WEPA CEO, to reflect on her years of experience leading in the federal human capital space.
Hello, and welcome to the Lessons in Leadership podcast. I'm your host, Shane Canfield, CEO of WEPA. Today I'm joined by Dr. Elizabeth Comstetter, Chief People Officer at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
In your current position at CISA, one of your responsibilities is ensuring a people-first culture. Explain what that is, and what's the role of leadership in creating and shaping that culture?
Yes, at CISA, really paramount to our culture is a people-first driven aspect, so that we are really looking at how do we accomplish our mission through our people. And in order to do that, we really value our people. We want them to feel empowered and supported and respected. And also that their managers care about them. So well-being is important. Psychological safety in the workplace is important, so that all voices and ideas are heard. So I like to call it our North Star. Having a people-first culture really starts with the people in order to get our incredibly difficult mission accomplished. In terms of leadership, which is a great question, I think we all know that culture is really driven by leadership and the behaviors that we allow and we reinforce in our leaders. So we really work at making sure that our leaders are bringing out the best in their people every day. So again, that they feel they can bring their voice, especially an opinion that might not go along with the majority of a group, so that we get that diverse perspective. We get those different ideas and experiences. And that's really where we find that it's important that leaders are purposefully bringing out their talent on their teams to enable our mission.
Yeah, excellent. We're going through a culture project at our work.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's been 6 months in the making, and it's going really well, but it is work.
Yes.
And it requires from the top down. So I'm also involved in that. I hear you.
Great.
Throughout your career, you've piloted many different talent management programs, including at NASA, the CIA, the FBI, just to name a few, and you have an amazing career. What have you learned, or how have you might have changed along the way in creating and leading those programs?
Yes, and I am so honored to have had a career in public service across multiple federal agencies, always in the realm of human resources and workforce performance. And I think because I study organizations and people in them, I've come to realize, particularly in the federal government, that many of our programs are really grounded in the industrial era thinking, that this is organizationally structured in a hierarchy with boxes and lines on charts, with the center being around jobs and what do we need to get this job done in terms of skills and training. And what I found is that we're really not in the industrial era anymore, where we would promote the smartest people who knew that work and they would then tell the people on their team how to do things and oversee that work. We're now in a digital era and the information era, where work gets done collaboratively across geographic boundaries and certainly across org charts. So we like to call it networks or hierarchies, and we really need to, again, unleash people so they can find those other people who are working on similar problems or have the right ideas. And so I really like to think of our work now in the talent programs being human-centered. It's more about the user and the experience than about the rules and regulations. So although we have to have rules and regulations, certainly in human resources, is that person experiencing what they need and getting what they need for their role at that time? So not so much on the job, but on the person. So for example, we're recruiting. What's the applicant experiencing? Because if they're not having a good experience with our organization from the time we're recruiting them, they're going to go work for somebody else. Same thing with like first-time supervisors. We know they need certain training, but telling them to sit in a class for 1 week and then hope a year from now they'll remember what they learned to apply, that's not really human-centered. The human-centered is what do they need when they need it, and building modules or just-in-time training and bringing that to the people, to that user, as they need it. So that's really, I think, the most important focus of talent programs today in this era to enable the workers to be the best they can be in their roles.
Excellent. New thinking. This is always an interesting question. Has there been a time when, as a leader, that you've made a mistake? And what is that? And I think most important, what did you take away from that? What did you learn from that?
Well, I kind of chuckle because I think as leaders, we have to learn to recognize our mistakes, admit our mistakes, and that they are opportunities to learn. And so I've had to do my own self-reflection on making mistakes and when things don't turn out the way that I expected them to. Makes me think of a time when I was at the Transportation Security Administration and I was a supervisor. And I was really embroiled with my program. I was the technical leader of it. I understood it. I'd run it for years. And I was making a briefing for a decision that had to be made about this program that was very near and dear to me. And I presented the briefing to one of the very senior people in the agency. And I think there are about 20 people in the room. And I had gone through the briefing, answered all the questions, and that leader then said, okay, I'm going to go around the room and get everybody's opinion, and then everybody gets to vote, which kind of set me aback because there were people in that room that didn't have any technical knowledge about my program. She even turned to the executive assistant there, taking notes on the meeting, and said, go ahead, and I want to hear from you. And I realized, in hindsight, I had stopped listening. I had been in transmitting all of my knowledge and what I saw to be the right way, and I was not listening to different perspectives in the room because I didn't think that, I didn't value that they were bringing any kind of input to this particular decision. And it didn't go as I had hoped, and I left very disappointed and was busy blaming the senior leader and how that meeting was conducted, that she let all these people have opinions when they didn't know, in my mind, didn't know what they were talking about. And so in reflection on that, I realize, and now as I've moved into more senior leadership positions, I realized that was a mistake, that it actually is really important to listen, especially to people who have different perspectives or at a different point in the career, not just the people who know the program or the technical really well. And so that was a mistake I made, and I realized in my own sense I wasn't listening to very different opinions, and I probably should have, because I would have learned more about what was needed for this program going forward than just leaving, getting upset that it didn't go a certain way. So I've really practiced active listening. I've practiced making sure there's very different people on teams and certainly on committees or councils, that we need early careers, people new to the agency, people who haven't walked in the shoes of the technical workforce, because they're asking questions we need to hear for these programs to be successful.
Excellent. Your career in talent management means your work is very closely tied to people. And even your title, Chief People Officer, what does that mean to you to be a leader in the federal system with that focus?
Isn't that a great title? I just love the title Chief People Officer, and I think it's my dream job, really, to be focused on people and culture and the workforce strategy for the whole agency. And I'm just so excited to be at CISA at this point in time. We're only 4 years young as an agency, so we're really still creating who we're going to become as an agency and what is our culture. And what kind of people and talent do we need to be sure we have to be successful? So it's very exciting for me to be in this role with a intentional focus on culture, because it's one of those things, if you leave it to chance and you kind of hope it goes the way you want it to, it probably won't. So by building programs, including leadership development programs, including any kind of training and learning and career growth, and engagement programs and listening programs, that's what's really key for, I think, for our agency and particularly me in this role. I think in the federal government, we got used to doing annual survey, the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey that OPM, Office of Personnel Management, runs every year. So we would do a survey and we'd read it and we'd say, oh, this is the opinion of our people. And then we would do action plans and then we'd roll out certain activities that we would hope would increase engagement. In this era, you can't do once a year and understand what your employees' experiences are, what they need, what's working well, and what needs to improve. We need active, ongoing listening programs. So one of the things we're doing at CISA is having more pulse surveys, having more focus groups and what we call sensing sessions, expecting our leaders to have office hours where anybody can come and just talk about what's going well, what do they need, how are things going, because we feel like it is an ongoing need to hear from our people. And I think in this role and over the years of serving, I've also realized there's never a one-size-fits-all. You know, we think certain people need certain things at certain times in their career. There's no one-size-fits-all. Neither can we also customize everything to every individual. So there's got to be a sweet spot in building really great talent programs, but also, like I said, thinking about, can we do this in modules? Can we make it a menu? Can we do it just in time as people need it so they can practice the new skill or knowledge in their role? So I think we have such great opportunity, again, with the technology that enables us to really focus on how we connect people with their work and their team to get things done in very new ways.
This is always an interesting question. Is there a figure either from your personal life, your past, somewhere in history generally that inspired you, your leadership style, how you view leadership?
There are many figures who have been very inspirational to me, but there is one that sticks out, and that's my mother, Paula Brownlee, who has been a very inspiring leader to me all my life. And I think because, first and foremost, she had a strong family and a strong career. And that's something I always wanted. And I saw her first as my mother, but then I also saw her as a leader in her career and in academia, which was her chosen field. But I always knew her family came first. And as I saw how she balanced different family needs with also a growing and more prominent career positions in leadership, that she had to balance that. And I think I learned from her that you can have both. You have to focus on different things through your career and through your life, but that you don't have to trade one for the other. I've been married, happily married for 32 years, and I'm a mother of twins who are almost 24 years old. So, and I've had a great career in public service. So I think that having her as a role model has really helped me find my own courage, find my own confidence, and find my own voice in how I can prioritize the things that are most important to me so that I can actually balance both family and career.
And you're doing it well. Thank you. Having known you now for 7 or 8 years, and worked alongside you, your passion is infectious.
Thank you.
Your intelligence and the thoughtfulness with which you approach all of these issues, it's an honor for you to be here, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
I'm Shane Canfield, CEO at WEPA, and until next time, have a great day.
Find the full podcast and future episodes of Lessons in Leadership on the Federal News Network app and anywhere you enjoy your podcasts.